brewing is as much about the process as it is about the product. At its most satisfying, brewing creates a culture and a community that goes beyond beer geekdom to make deeper connections. It's about learning, sharing, and creating. It's a touchstone that can make people who've never met instantly friends. Beer with Strangers starts now.
Welcome
Drink
to
what you like and be happy.
Welcome to episode 94 of Beer with Strangers. I'm your host, Tony Russo, and I'm joined this week by
Doug Griffith, Frank Brewing.
And we have some beer in the freezer to try later, and I was just reading the sign when the thing started. So
main reason it's there so we don't forget to get bottle bombs in the freezer, and I got a mess to clean up.
That's so. It happens to everybody once. Sometimes it happens twice, but I don't think it's ever happened a third time to anyone.
And that's why the sign, because I know it will happen eventually again. So anyway, I'll start with my weather report. And for those who can't see me, or for those who can see me, I've determined it is summertime. I've got a nice trim. Yeah, my hair. See,
he looks like he lost weight. I came in.
And
I'm like,
the beard is almost non-existent. So for the weather report, it is nice and warm out today, although not as sunny as it was yesterday or the day before. But it's still supposed to be somewhere in the 70s today, so not bad. The grass is very green, and I see lots of dandelions out there. Unfortunately,
so. My wife actually has planted our garden. And it looks like we did lose those fig trees, but not all the way.
Okay.
So it looks like I saved a couple branches and a couple I may have lost. So I might get a fig this year. Yeah, there's still some green. So,
but I know the peaches were a major.
They got clobbered?
Yes. No matter what they did, it seemed like it was too cold.
Yeah, well, I decided this year, even though I saved my figs, this year I'm going to wrap them and I'm going to leave them wrapped till May. And I don't care. It's not going to be able to get hot enough in April for me to take the wrappers off.
Also, you wrap them. Do you put like straw or something in there to help?
I was just going to put burlap. Just burlap, and you know, the old Italian men would put like plastic. You know, would just put like black plastic and then a garbage pail on top, and that worked for them.
I've got some white foam, which I'd be welcome to give you a roll if you want to wrap that around and put your burlap. Might insulate it a little bit more.
If I ran into it, it wouldn't hurt so much. all sorts of stuff this week. We're going to start off with the homebrew section. Yesterday, I was trying the new beer from Fin City, and it is called Weedline, and it is a
session IPA.
A session IPA, and what I said in the blog was that when Fordham and Dominion when Fordham started out as Fordham, that's what their specialty was going to be, English style ales. So they were making these low alcohol pale ales and India pale ales, and everything was really low alcohol. And so during the rush up in the craft beer boom, a lot of it was like, well, you know, that's just the small beers and we like the big beers. But then when session IPAs got popular, they're like, well, we've been doing one for 20 years. I hope you enjoy it. And so what I thought Doug would talk about is how to get a lot of flavor and still and not a lot of alcohol. Because usually I think of the lower alcohol beers. A lot of times they can be a little too sweet for me. But I think it's just because
that is just more hops.
Right. You just throw more hops in and the sweet goes away.
Mainly hops. But going back to what you were saying about the English style beers, it's just they do things very more balanced. Hop and malt ratio is closely watched, so you don't have an overabundance of hops. You have enough that counteracts the sweetness of whatever you have as far as malt, but it just comes out to be a balanced beer. And I think that's more the challenge, is getting that balance in a session IPA, where you don't have to use a whole lot of hops to balance the malt that's left from brewing. So that's the challenge, is to get that in good proportion so that you have good flavor of, you have some nice malt character there, and you have enough hops to counteract the sweetness you have from the residual sugars. So nothing terribly difficult doing it. It's just getting the balance right.
Well, because you guys do that crab beer, and that's a light beer. That's right, the closest right. thing to an American light beer. And is that coming in about 4%? Is that?
Yeah, I think it's 4.5 actually. Yeah. So
how is that supposed to be bitter? Is that balanced to be less bitter?
It's balanced to be less. Well, I can't say it's. Yes, it has some bitterness to it, but you don't want an overabundance, especially for main. We call crab beer because it was designed to be drank with steamed crabs.
Right.
So you don't want something that's overly hoppy. So, but it's still nice, flavorful beer to drink with steamed crabs.
Yeah, and as I had the shore break. I went. So whenever I go to a party, I always take way more beer than I could possibly drink because I want to be able to share, but I also don't want to have to worry about not being able to have a beer.
Okay.
So I brought it, and there was supposed to be three other couples there. So I brought two growlers of Shorebreak, which is the pale ale that they do over at Third Wave. And then nobody showed up, so I ended up having to drink both growlers
but
on my own.
I think that's very appropriate, two growlers,
yes.
for the amount of people you expected to be there.
Absolutely, so. Absolutely. But I forgot, because I usually, this is why it's been on my mind, because I'm usually the guy, I'm like, hey, try this odd beer, or hey, try this really strong beer, or hey, try this really weird flavored beer. And you bring, and you're like, wow, I forgot that you can just drink a normal beer, and they're good, you know? And that's what I mean. The Shore Pale Ale and this Weed Line, they're both just solid drinking beers. You know, it made me. We were talking off air. It made me kind of long for the days that I never got to see when you could get a can of big production beer and it tasted like just like beery. You know, because you were saying the Coors was that way when it.
Yeah, from what I remember, I went out west in the mid-70s, did some skiing out in Utah, and they had regular Coors, which at that time was all delivered in refrigerated trucks because they didn't pasteurize it at all. And I guess it was before I know a lot of the such as Dogfish, a lot of the breweries don't pasteurize, but they
right.
do a very good filtration now of the beer, so there's minimal or no yeast actually gets into the final beer, which always came to me odd that they the big guys would pasteurize it, which means they when it heated it to about 160 degrees to make sure the yeast was all killed. But if there's no residual sugars left, there was no reason to do it.
Right.
But it supposedly, I guess, makes it more stable, getting rid of all the yeast. And then there's no sediment on the bottom, which.
Yeah, they're selling the big clear beers. Yeah. And it's funny that I forget because I have enough of the occasional homebrew that I forget to look for clarity. Like yeah. I would be a bad BC, JP, JPC.
Well, some styles it's expected to have, such as yeast. I mean, Hefeweizens, in fact, you get some of them, even the German beers, say to roll the bottle on the table before you serve it so it gets all the yeast up off the bottom. It's expected to be
so you
cut.
Don't get it off the bottom. Oh, that's fun.
Yes. Well, it's all dispersed throughout the
right, so it's
the
not
beer.
Just mud at the
right,
end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that also provides flavor, and that's the characteristic of that beer, and we had it in Munich. And those wheat beers are all very cloudy.
Yeah.
So, but if you let it sit for a while,
that's
such shipping long distances, you get sediment on the bottom.
And I guess you also want to be able to, like, if you're putting it on the train, you know, you want it to be able to take the extremes of temperature within a larger range, maybe
yeah.
than you can do if you don't pasteurize it.
Right. But it makes. I assume it pasteurization makes it stable longer. So,
mm-hmm. So oftentimes we have backup hitters to help out around the store here. For those of you who are not watching it, Doug actually just walked away. We do this at Extreme Brewing in Laurel, Delaware, and it's a homebrew shop. This is a working business, and I come in the middle of the day in working business, and I sit down with the owner, with one of the owners, or one of the workers, depending upon what's going on. So sometimes we get distracted. So we'll just start. We're going to go on to the next story, which which this week is about Anheuser-Busch selling the Peroni brand. Peroni? I can't even get that right at parties. Selling the Peroni brand to Ashi. Ashi? Can you pronounce that one?
Didn't even try.
Asahi. Yeah, there you go. Which is the Japanese, I guess, equivalent of Budweiser. That's a beer. You can get that in 32-ounce cans at the.
Oh yeah.
Okay. If you go to any of the Chinese restaurants here. Yeah. They'll serve you a Japanese beer because they're Asian, right? That's always weird to me. Like if you go to a good Italian restaurant and you ask for a French wine, they're going to give you hell over it. But they're like, yeah, we know that you can't tell the difference. So between, you know, Japanese cuisine and Chinese cuisine. So you're going to order sushi and egg rolls and we're going to give you Asahi beer, which I've had it a couple times. It's fine.
Yeah. Kieran's the only one I can remember that I've had.
Maybe they own Kieran.
Yeah, that could be.
That's fine. And so what I was interested about in this was that Budweiser has to get smaller if it wants to buy Miller. If it wants to get bigger, first it has to get smaller. So they're supposed to divest themselves of some of the different beers that they have. So I was kind of hoping that they'd be divesting themselves of, you know, breweries that I like that they bought. You know, they've, as you know, Budweiser's purchased a lot of craft beers, and I thought that maybe some of them would be kind of like spun off, you know, none the worse for wear. But what it looks like they're doing is they're taking other large-ish beers and just spreading them around into other places. So it doesn't say which other beers that were included with Peroni, but I've had Peroni, and I guess I don't even know if that's changed. Is that one? Is that still made in Italy, or is that made
in?
Yeah, it's not made in Milwaukee or
no. That's an Italian beer.
So it's fine. That's actually kind of in the style we were talking about earlier, where it's just one of these beers that, you know, it's beer flavored and it's not really heavy and it's pretty flavorful. So Budweiser getting rid of that makes it easier for them to buy Miller. But I was hoping that they'd get rid of, as I was saying, like smaller beers that maybe I liked.
Well, I think one of them I thought maybe they'd be selling it off to some of the other U.S. or bigger, you know, brewery such as Dogfish,
right?
To expand, but I think Dogfish is probably like a lot of the other U.S. Craft brewers are busy with their own brands,
right? They don't want
to
be
to expand into another
in the brand management brand. Business, yeah. And that's the, I guess that's going to be the trick for Busch is to find a way to, you know, not sell bullets to the other army.
Right.
Because the Asahi group, I can't pronounce it, but I've seen it before. Asahi. We're going to call it Asahi.
The
Asahi,
I think it's a good move for them because they said their sales are down. They're not going to come wherever they're, I guess, would be Japan and around Japan. But it gets them more exposure in
internationally.
U.S. and England
And as I said, Peroni is a pretty good beer. What is Peroni? That's something else that I know. Does that sound
Peroni?
Peroni.
Peroni. No, I don't know.
Oh, you know what? It's the little cigars.
Oh.
The cigars, those are Peronis.
So we got some food, cigars, beer, huh?
We got a whole meal and then a little dessert for after. So it'll be interesting to see what else gets spun off. And it said, and a group of other SAB beer brands, but it doesn't name them. So it'll be interesting to see what gets picked up by this new company. And
I guess it's good for both companies, InBev and Asahi. InBev gets the non-craft breweries,
right?
Expand or allows them to expand with SAB, but not to.
Right,
I don't know.
Yeah, not,
just another corporate move.
It's difficult to find. We're going to talk about this next week, but Genesee is going to be in the news next week. They just had something go on up there, but they're owned by, I think, a larger beer collective. And I don't know if you know anything about this. I don't, which is, so this is a legitimate question. If you don't know, then we'll move on.
I know Genesee Cream Ale. That's the main thing I know about Genesee.
Right. Well, they're owned by a larger beer company, but I don't know if it's like, I worked for the newspaper. I worked for the Star Democrat, and they were bought by a company that was formed to buy smaller papers, like a collective. But they didn't make their own papers, but they owned a bunch of different papers. And I wonder if that's kind of who owns Genesee now. It's called like the North Brewing Company or something like that. Or like
it makes things cheaper to buy and administer.
Right. Well, and like Fordham is owned by, Coastal Brewing Company. Yeah. And that was formed when they merged Fordham and Dominion, they made a new company and they called it Coastal Brewing. So there are these companies like that. And so that one of those companies, is who owns Genesee, which is different from this one because, Anheuser-Busch owns Budweiser. Like they started with Budweiser and they grew that. And then Asahi, same thing, has a beer called Asahi, and they also have acquired other beers, but these other groups, like the one that bought Dale's Pale Ale that we were talking about a couple weeks ago, they're getting to be big players too. So I wonder if Budweiser will start dumping off their beers to them. So like, the guys who own Dale's Pale Ale and Cigar City will also own, I don't know, Ballantine, yeah. or like the guy, I haven't spoken with him in a while, but the guy who bought National Premium Beer.
Right. But he's just a small guy now.
Right. Yeah. He's got offices
in National brand again, but
right. And that's interesting. It's interesting because I feel like it's a step behind. People are getting more experience conscious. They want to know about the brewer and they want to go to the brewer, but a lot of these big companies, they're still in the whole brand thing. Like, well, if I own this brand, people respect this brand. But I think that beer drinkers and consumers generally are getting a little bit more savvy about, just because it's like there's less brand loyalty, I think.
Yeah.
Because more is known
and
about
the trend
brands.
These days is to try different beers.
Right.
And you don't just generally stick with one. You're more apt to try somebody's new beer.
Yeah. And so speaking of trying new beers, we'll move on to the tasting. Did we get everything so far?
I think so.
All right. So the food pairings. Food pairings we talk about, as you know, with some sort of regularity here. We get a kick out of them. And we came across an article this week about three overlooked beer styles to pair with food. And my boss and I have like a little bit of conflict. I don't like to write these articles that start with numbers or have numbers in them because you have to change that's not what this story is about because no one overlooks these beers when it comes to pairing. But, it's three pairs to pair food with is already done. So
it's a catch your eye thing.
It really is. And it's really hard for me to do. So let's work from the bottom up because we'll work from the one that I'm least likely that I haven't paired anything with to other ones that I paired lots of stuff with. So the Rausch beer. And what's the difference between, is there a difference between a Rausch beer and a Marzen or?
Yeah, totally. Rausch beer means it's smoky. It's got smoke.
But that's what we had last
and
here.
So we made one of them a month and a half ago at our latest all grain demonstration.
Right.
And it's been very popular. As you, I think you tasted them.
They were very good. Both of them were very good.
We did two different yeasts with them too, and it's amazing the difference between the two.
Yeah, the first one was less smoky. The yeast that they chose is what kind of brought out the smoke in the malt, which was fun for us. But here it says they like the savory aspects of a smoked beer. I'm just going to skip to the end where they make the recommendation. It says here, generally, if I am working with a smoked beer, I will let the smoke in the beer be the only smoke in the pairing. Pairing smoked beer with a smoked dish can overwhelm the palate. But see, yeah, I'm the same way. You want, I like the contrast more than the compliments, especially with a lot of these, So what he said is grilled foods are fine, but not too smoky. And then like thick things, Parmesan and mushrooms can be, and savory things like that. The salt is really good with these. The other good thing about the Rausch beer is I think I had one at a beer hall in Jersey City as well. They're good for, they're low alcohol beer often. So you can drink them all day and they're not, like, depending upon how smoky they are, they're not terribly offensive to the palate. So, you know, you can drink them and then drink something else, as opposed to one of the things that always makes me nervous about an IPA is if it's trying to show, not trying to show off, but if it's a little bitter, then if it's a little too bitter, then that's all you're drinking for the rest of the day. So, you know, when you like to try a bunch of different beers as you go along, you have to kind of plan out and map what you're going to try. Sometimes you'll go into a place and you'll say, oh, I want to have this, this, that, and the other thing. And you try this beer and you're like, oh, all right, I can't drink anything else now because this beer that I've already tried has kind of like dominated my palate. So what's good about these beers is they don't necessarily do that. And that makes them good to have with food. So do you, off the top of your head, have anything you prefer with a Rausch beer?
Well, Rausch beers are kind of different in the fact that the smoke comes through and you need something pretty for eating with it. It would have to be something pretty robust, such as a good, nice burger that's been grilled or a steak that's been put on the grill. So you got to have something that's very robust to
overcome the flavor, yeah,
with the smoke. But it does go with smoked foods very well because of the smoke taste.
Right.
Which I think most of that smoky taste is aroma,
right?
More than probably actually flavor.
So you can still pick some of it up on the tongue, even if your nose is a little overwhelmed. And then okay, second on the list is the Saison. Saison, if I had to pick a favorite beer of all time, it would probably I always like them, even when I have one that's not great, I still like it a lot. And they're just I don't know if it's because it's the first like complex beer that I ever was able to pull apart all by myself, you know. I really enjoy them
this time of year. Now through summer, they're nice and light and fruity most of the time. Not that you can't, and most of them are fairly low in alcohol, but you can find some Saisons that have been aged longer and are higher in alcohol. But most of the ones these days are light and fruity and just good quaffers.
Right. Yeah. And I know that we've talked about this before, but I always like to mention it, especially because I'll be going there again soon, is our friends at the Dewey Beer Company. They do their mussels in a Saison sauce, and it's better than any wine sauce you've ever had. It is so, so, so good. And here they're recommending risotto, which would be, I mean, you don't need a good reason to have risotto, but risotto's, that's another, like, I think that's kind of a good way. If it's something you feel like makes you crave white wine, the Saison's a good kind of replacement. So if you want to have it with like a fish, and because of the citrus, I think, and the spices, that makes it a nice beer. And last but not least, the brown ale, which you can pair with everything. That's it. That's another, just a, give me 10, give me 20.
I think a lot of people just don't go for the brown ales because they're dark in color.
Right. But they're not, often they're not dark in taste.
Just nice malty flavored beer. A lot of times they're not overly hopped. So you taste that sweetness from the malts.
Right. And the thing that we were talking about a while ago, if you're a regular listener, is we had the Maytag blue cheese at the beer and cheese tasting. Right. And that was served with the Angry Clown Brown Ale. And that was everyone's favorite. And I mean, the cheese was everyone's favorite. But what happened was the beer was just so subtle compared to the cheese, which was kind of like a textural punch. It was creamy and it was blue cheese, so it was
pungent.
Pungent. Yeah. And thick. And then this just like washed, like it was like a tongue scrub, this beer. And it was really good. And this is they're saying here it'll add flavor to meats and things like that. They call it here. Oh, I wonder if they call the other one the white wine or the Pinot, because they call this the Pinot Noir. of the beer world, which is funny because I just made the white wine connection with the other one. But these beers are good. Like, if you don't know what you want, this is – if you like beer and there's nothing that's familiar, you're not going to go wrong with those brown ales. Yeah. At bars, especially with bar food, like, you know, with something fried, or if you want to get chips, or if you want to get French fries, or if you want to get, I don't know, fried. If they're going to fry it, it's going to taste really, really nice with the brown ales at a bar. It's a good bar beer. It's a good drinking beer. And that's the other thing. They tend not to be crazy high in alcohol. So you can have a bunch of them and not worry too much about it. And just on that note, because I don't know if we got to talk about it—that they've officially bottled now. Did we talk about that yet? Asselwoman has
no.
Yep, their bottles are out. You can find them in stores in Maryland and Virginia and Delaware soon, as I understand it. So keep your eye out for that and grab an Angry Clown Brown Ale. They have that. They have Transporter, and they have a blonde. I think they have a blonde that's out. Okay. And that's one of the interesting things about the new beers that are coming out in packaging now. They're going with different styles. Like, everybody's like, okay, well, I can't put out another IPA in a bottle.
Right. There's so many. And just as a note on that, on the brown ales, I just wanted to make a note. If your brown ale is too dark for you, try an English pale ale. Now, the English pale ales are not like the IPAs of American style.
Right. They're
lighter.
Softer, yeah.
Right. Much lighter, much more balanced, less hops. And main reason they call it pale is because it's light in color, but not near as light as what a Pilsner is. It's halfway between what the brown ales generally are and the Pilsner. So they're in there in between. And again, similar to the brown ales, they're lightly hopped, but got more color than the Pilsner.
Yeah. And Pilsners for me are often a little too, I don't want to say too bitter, but too sharp, I guess.
Because they're usually well carbonated. So you get that.
Is that what it is?
Bite. Yeah.
That's very cool. So that's it for that story. And last but not least, we're heading down to Australia.
Down under.
And mostly I wanted to talk about this. I'm actually just going to read you the paragraph because I wrote it so long ago that I don't remember precisely why I wanted to talk about this. All right. So the story that you can find on the website on Sure Craft Beer, it says, in this guide to some of the best beer places in Australia, what is most striking is how they have adopted the American model, which is really just a pre-industrial model. Stick a brewery in the middle of a town. People come, hang out, and get to know one another from there. And that's the wrong there, guys. Sorry. From there, they start businesses, political movements, associations, and just regular community. It isn't hard to comprehend when you take the notion of beer as a tool. So
if you build it, they will come.
If you build it, they will come. And people,
I think it's great. You know, you take a area that is not doing maybe well, and a beer bar opens up or a brewery opens up and promotes that area. People come in and it promotes the area and cleans up the area some because people are coming. So somebody else opens another business,
right?
Coffee shop.
And people want to feel good about it. And I think the radical difference, and this is something that we're going to promote a lot this summer, is that these are places to bring your kids and your wife and your dog, really. Like, you know, these are all kid-friendly, dog-friendly places, most of them, many of them. And the beer festivals increasingly are that way. We're having a beer festival in Salisbury on June – I think it's June 18th. I think I'm not supposed to say that because I don't think it's written in stone yet. But it's in June. And, you know, and I don't want to take credit, but I want to make it clear that one of the things that was very important to me was to make it very kid friendly and very dog friendly and make it more about the community,
family oriented,
right, than just about the beer, because the beer should be excellent and you should be able to get it and not have to be very uptight about it. So this might be a little uptight because Salisbury is not known for being not uptight, but we'll get there. You know, you start to say, hey, look, you know, there were all these people and they were drinking and they were having a good time and they listened to music. They brought their dogs. They brought their kids. The kids played and it was fun. You know,
I think this is another reason, going back to one of the previous stories, the the IPAs that we're talking about, session IPAs,
right, same
that
thing,
are lower in alcohol. So you're not getting as intoxicated. You can drink a few more. You can drink two instead of just one.
Right.
Of 9% beer, you're drinking a 4.2 beer, and just enjoy yourself more and don't have to worry about driving somewhere and having a problem.
Absolutely. And actually, I put a couple pictures up, but I'll put some more up later on in the week. When they debuted the easy drinking, what's it called, the weed line from Finn City, it was $4.20 for two pints, and you could only buy two pints. And so I had them backed up at the bar. I said, no, bring them both, put them right here. And that was kind of cool to order two pints at a time. Because I usually do that with like big heavy beers that are served cold. You know, I'll say, give me two. And these actually warmed up quite well. IPAs do well as they warm. Yeah. They're not, you know, the second one was a lot more, I want to say fruity, but it wasn't like fruity, but I think
the malt comes through more.
You got a lot more of the,
you get more flavors.
Flavors, yeah. as it warmed up. And so we are cruising into the station here. Just a couple of plugs for me. Anyway, my book is out in 2 weeks on May 9th. You can get it on Amazon if that's where you buy books. If you want to buy them from people, I'm one of those people. You can find me. I'm doing a book tour. So far, I have Blue Earl on May 12th, Bethany Beach, Dewey Beach Company on May 13th, and then Fordham and Dominion on June 3rd. And more dates will be announced, and I'm actually putting up a page, so I'll promote that better next week. But yeah, my book will be out. Come buy it. We're gonna have parties all over the place, and it'll be fun. Do you have classes?
Nothing scheduled at this time. We're talking about all grain sometime in, I think, June. I'm trying to figure out what dates, because we've got the National Home Brewer Conference to go to early June, so sometime after that.
Yeah, that's also on June 3rd, right?
Yeah.
That'll be a lot of fun. It's going to be a good summer. It's going to be a long summer, and hopefully it's not going to be too hot, but it'll be hot enough that we can enjoy ourselves. And so for all the information, and as we update it, you can visit extremebrewing.com, extremebrewing.com, or extremebrewing.com. From there, you can find a link to the podcast under everything else. You can also find classes and everything else. That's why they call it that.
Everything else.
You can find me at surecraftbeer.com. And socially, it's my name backwards, OSSURYNOT. I'm that on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all of the phony things that you do. I don't mean phony like, I mean with your phone. All right. But until next week, folks.
Drink what you like and be happy. Have a great day.
Beer with Strangers is recorded at Extreme Brewing in Laurel, Delaware. For more information about the show and for beer news and commentary, visit stateofthebeer.com, where you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes and follow along on whichever social network you're least likely to ignore. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. The state of the beer is strong.